The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Welcome once again. So the last reflection in this series on equanimity. So I saw a couple bumper stickers recently that I liked a lot. The first one was on a station wagon, and it was black background, white letters, and it just said, "I used to be cool." What does that have to do with equanimity? I don't know. Not much. That doesn't really tie in. Maybe to yesterday's theme, but there's more. Just I like that bumper sticker and just wanted to share that with you. The other one, this one, is very relevant for today. It said, cynicism is obedience. Yeah. Cynicism is obedience. One of the most common misconceptions about equanimity is that it's a form of indifference or passivity or maybe even cynicism. But equanimity is not about the future. In a sense, it's not even really about the presence. It's about accepting what has already arisen, what has come to pass. Yeah. That moment of the very recent past that is here. Can we open to that? That this is the fruit of this moment. And a moment of deep equanimity now does not imply passivity in the next moment. Passivity or action, that is really another question. It's not actually so closely linked to the question of equanimity, the practice of equanimity. Again, Shinzen Young, equanimity involves non-interference with the natural flow of sensory experience. Apathy implies indifference to the controllable outcome of objective events. Now, this is an important clarification. And some of the confusion comes because we extrapolate meditation instructions as instructions for life, right? So some meditation instructions, some of the things we say during a guided meditation are indeed instructions for living, but some aren't. Yeah, so in guided meditations, I never say, okay, now breathe out. And at the end of your exhale, scratch anything and everything that itches. Yeah. That's not an instruction we tend to give. But if I were doing some life coaching, I would tell you, yeah, most of the time when you have an itch, scratch it. Yeah. Meditation instructions they're a training ground, you know, and they're a cultivation of these beautiful qualities of the heart, but they can't be, not all of them can be easily extrapolated to all conditions, the complexities of being human. And so we, you know, when we're teaching, we say we're desperate. We'll say whatever we can to support non-clinging, love, determination. Yeah. And there, those instructions, they have obviously a place, an important place. We gather here to practice together, but they can't be traced out in a linear way to all of life. Yeah. So when it matures, when equanimity matures, it enlivens rather than dampens our commitments to alleviating suffering. And the poignancy of feeling that I described a couple days ago, that sticks to our bones. Yeah. This way that equanimity is a kind of in the cauldron of experience, the equanimity meeting dukkha, that our life becomes much less melodramatic, but more and more poignant. And it's like there's a lot of feeling. The heart moves easily, but it's surrounded by the tranquilizing factors, yeah? The depth of feeling occurs in a kind of ambiance of ease, of tranquility, of equanimity. The Buddha was worried about nihilism, you know. And there are experiences, there are meditative experiences that can tend towards that way. Experiences where everything, all sensory impressions have one taste. And, you know, it's like the world is like a gust of wind and we're like a gust of wind. All phenomena just kind of blowing through kind of space, blowing through emptiness. And one might get the impression amidst that it's all the same, and in this way nothing matters. But the Buddha found the middle path between extremes, between everything means everything and nothing means anything. When everything means everything, you can't stop caring, you can't stop worrying, you can't stop giving, you can't justify even a moment's rest. And when nothing means anything, love dissolves and all goodness is at risk. So equanimity, it really, one way of thinking about it is that it purifies our compassion. Purifies our compassion. It makes it less compulsive. It makes it less codependent, less grandiose, less self-righteous. Equanimity purifies our compassion, our care. And we see that actions arising from equanimity, from this non-interference with what has arisen, those actions arising from equanimity are more potent, have greater moral force than actions arising from clinging. Yeah. Our heart, it needs to rest. It, can't always be in a state of openness. It can't, you know, like a blossom, it cannot stay open for all seasons. And when we feel like too much might be asked of our heart, we shut down. Yeah. When we feel like the demands are too much, we actually shut down. And so, shown one child who's hungry, we humans get very generous. Shown 1,000, we start to shut down. And of course, I'm here to tell you there are 1,000. Yeah. 1,000. And can we open to this? Can compassion meet that fully, full-heartedly, radically, their pain permeating our heart, their pain spurring action, their pain being moralized, being a concern for us, even though we might be separated by space or by time. But we can only open to the depth of need. We can only open with compassion when we also trust that the heart can rest in equanimity too. We are less intimidated by the enormity of dukkha. Yeah. We're more willing to spend our well-being, to spend our love on others, because we know there's peace too. And we know that peace is the only state that doesn't fatigue the heart. Peace is the only state that doesn't need its seasons. And so we have a place to rest, and then we open again, we love deeply again, we leave it all on the floor, and then rest again. The philosopher Derek Parfit: if we are the only rational beings in the universe, as some evidence suggests, it matters even more whether we shall have descendants or successors during the billions of years in which that would be possible. Some of our successors might live lives and create worlds that, though failing to justify past suffering, would give us all, including some of those who have suffered, reasons to be glad that the universe exists. Yeah, reasons to be glad that the universe exists. Yeah, may we find those reasons. Yeah, may we love well and rest deeply. Yeah. So thank you all. Thank you for this week, your practice, many of you over not just this week, but months, year plus. Yeah. Yeah, I'm honored to have been with you and nurturing for my own heart to reflect on these themes. So yeah, I wish you all well. You'll be back. Plan is for Monday. Okay, thank you all, and thank you, Kevin, for DJing the whole thing. And yeah, I'll see you around the Dharma campus somewhere.